Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Wine Times, brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. Discussing and decanting with Will and myself today is the Blur bassist, writer, farmer, and award-winning artisan cheesemaker, Alex James.
Hello.
Alex was first inspired to pursue music when he devoured the Beatles film Help following the death of John Lennon. He picked up a guitar and a Beatles songbook, and 9 years later he met Damon Albarn, Graham Coxon, and David Rowntree, who would go on to become Blur. And since those heady days in the 90s and beyond to now, Alex has been a writer, a radio host, and latterly a farmer and cheesemaker. He also runs his own festival at his Cotswold farm, and now he's turned his hand to wine. So we're delighted because we have come to you today, Alex. We are sitting in a cathedral, a barn, on your farm.
Welcome to the office. Yeah, this was actually, it's quite a monastic building, yeah. Isn't it? It's an old barn, late Victorian barn, where they used to process grain. We've converted it into an office.
And we're right in the centre of England, in the Cotswolds.
Banging the bullseye of England's green and pleasant.
Thomas Hardy-esque, although a little bit further north.
With some of your wine just loitering. And what I'm most excited about, and will be very excited about, this food.
Yeah, there's cheese.
Tell us about this mighty bit of cheese that's just winking at us.
Well, I mean, cheese and wine are excellent.
Almost obligatory.
Excellent bedfellows, aren't they? And it's amazing. Actually, when we moved to the farm, Claire and I bought it on our honeymoon 20 years ago. It was a very, very, very different landscape then. Yeah. Like whenever you saw a farmer on the telly, he was crying his eyes out because he'd had to kill all his cattle because of foot and mouth or BSE or something. And, You know, think of a farmer on telly now, it's Jeremy Clarkson.
Jeremy Clarkson,
his head off.
Who lives just around the corner.
This area didn't really get affected by the Industrial Revolution. It still looks like the same as it did in the 1780s, but nothing had really changed until the moment that we moved here. I think farmers that were dairy farmers particularly that were struggling to make a profit on their milk realized if they made cheese that you know that it's a better business and more fun. And British food culture, which had been completely decimated actually by the Second World War, was just beginning to find its feet again. You know, my parents grew up with rationing. You know, bacon was rationed until my dad was like 25 or so. It's 1956. It's crazy.
We always forget that rationing went on beyond the Second World War.
Oh, my word, yeah.
For years afterwards.
Yeah. 10 years afterwards.
My grandmother was always jealous of the neighbours because they could get things like eggs and jam. Oh. And she was always going on about it. And that
It was absolutely catastrophic. It's hard to imagine, but we ran out of food. And recipes weren't passed down from generation to generation. Cooking skills weren't passed on. But our timing arriving here was really perfect. It was the kind of, at that point, television programs, great television programs featuring celebrity chefs. Yeah. You know, Marco Pierre White had previously been the first British chef to win 3 Michelin stars. There was, you know, and Chris Corbin and Jeremy King with their restaurants in London. You know, the tide was gradually turning to the point now where I think Britain really is the most exciting place for food on the planet. We're in renaissance, and we were very lucky. There was a real sort of British cheese making revolution. Suddenly we were making more different types of cheese than France. But I didn't know what the hell I was going to do with it? And we'd literally been here for 2 years, like scratching our heads, when a local cheesemaker who'd moved out of the area was returning and was looking for somewhere to make cheese. And I was like, that's it, cheese. And I was writing a column in the Independent about my transition from kind of nocturnal globetrotting musician to quiet country gentleman. I said, I've worked out what I'm going to do. I'm going to make cheese. And literally, like, as a journalist, when you file your copy, the best you can normally hope for is nothing. You know, if that means they swallowed it, you know, whenever they call you back, it's like, because they want you to change something. But the phone literally rang 3 minutes later and it was the editor going, cheese, I love it. Write me a feature. And I wrote a feature and it all just snowballed really good. There's funny, there was film crews, right? It's a cheese kind of needed a face.
It kind of must have been rather lovely for you to really ground yourself. You can't get more grounded than on a farm, I reckon, you know, after that kind of 100% years of rock star royalty,
it's the closest thing there is to a kind of natural habitat for a rock gentleman, the farm, you know. Yeah. It's hard to think of a half decent musician who doesn't live on a farm. You know, Steve Winwood was probably the very first one. He lives locally.
You're all around here. What is it about this heritage?
Well, I think the Cotswolds is, you know, England's a very densely populated country, but the Industrial Revolution really didn't happen here. It still looks exactly the same as it did around the Enclosures Act 1782. But there were no mineral resources here, no big rivers, no ports, no cities. So it still looks exactly the same as it did pre-Industrial Revolution, but it's an hour and change from London, the bigger city in Western Europe.
But that's the incredible thing about England, isn't it? You don't have to drive very far to hit rural England.
Yes,
it's true. And it's amazing that you can't get a mobile signal with that. So it's London iPhone.
We are thrilled that we're hopefully about to sample some of the cheese.
It looks delicious.
As we think about that, we have also your Britpop sparkling wine,
yeah,
which we're
going
to sample.
I'm so proud of this.
It's great, Alex. Tell us about it while Will does his...
So shall I open it?
Yeah, you open
it. Is that right?
Oh, please do, yeah.
And then we can do a bit of cheese, a bit of wine, I'll be so happy.
You talk about the sort of cheese revolution. We are living through the great English wine.
These are absolutely the golden years of English winemaking. Well, having said that, it's often claimed that champagne was sparkling wine was probably invented not by Dom Perignon but in England, because we have better glass than anywhere
else. Sir Admiral Sir Robert Mansell,
really,
and he had the after he retired from the Navy.
That was very satisfying.
So what you do is you hold the cork and you twist the.
It was a gentle sigh, wasn't it?
Instead of using
an iron.
But no, so Sir Admiral, after he left the Navy, he was given the monopoly on the coal-fired glass factories of England. Wow. And of course, in France, they had wood-fired. So we created the stronger bottle. And we know from the records of Dom Perignon down in Champagne that he ordered from Mansell. So it was like Concord. It was like a joint Anglo-French. At the same time that France was, you know, booming, the champagne industry was booming, they did need our technology, because the secondary fermentation, you need a very strong bottle.
Yes, yeah.
But having said all that, I was down at the Dartmouth Food Festival, and there's a guy called James Crowden, who's written The History of Cider, brilliant book. And he said that actually the cider makers of the West Country were doing it before Sir Christopher Merritt.
Really.
So sort of before the 1660s.
Wow.
So we are in the heart here. You know, in the Cotswolds of historic sparkling wine.
Will bury his nose in it in about half an hour. So was there a moment when you thought, well, the cheese has gone very well, where are we going to go next?
Well, I trademarked the name Britpop about 10 years ago, because every time I heard the word, a little bit of me died. You know, I thought I need to reclaim this and empower myself. And I really wanted to do a sparkling wine. And it was difficult to find the right partner. We've planted literally thousands of apple trees, because here we're quite high up here.
Yeah, and that's the killer, isn't it? Because you get the winds and the storms, the October winds.
Traditionally, this is apple orchards and peri orchards. Yeah. I literally planted thousands of apple trees, thinking, how am I going to make sparkling wine? And we were kind of fiddling around with cider recipes. So actually, the first iteration of Britpop was a cider, and we launched that at Feastival 2 or 3 years ago, and people just loved it. I mean, I think there's a real appetite for kind of good quality British produce, you know, but I think we're all really pleased to celebrate.
So you sort of kind of started with the name and then thought, what could we
make? I've got some form with sparkling wine. You know, when I wrote a book about the blur years, and when I was kind of weighing it all up, I realized I'd drunk quite a lot. You know, I basically got through three bottles of champagne a day for about 15 years.
That's very good form.
And well, when you go on tour, you get you get a rider, you know, so champagne went on the rider, three bottles. So
and did you have a favourite mark?
It was quite nice the way that it changed. You know, sometimes it would be a dreary monopole, you know, and if the promoter, if we'd done really well, you know, it might be a Krug or a Cristal.
Oh, God, Alex, I was reading something you wrote about riders that's making me think about that. In the early days, you were happy with the sort of crate of Newcastle Brown
Ale. Oh, the Newcastle Brown days, yeah,
and
yeah.
And a piece of local cheese. And then
well, you know, cheese was on the rider as well. I mean, there aren't many. It's kind
You've
of like...
stayed to brand all these years.
it's strange. So what do you want every day? You know, you can have whatever you want. And it becomes a kind of a thing of torment, actually, because you don't, you know...
Because...
There aren't many things that you want every day. Champagne, yeah. Yes. Cheese, yes. And pants and socks. They're
yes,
new pants and socks.
Like
you can never have too
shop.
Many
yeah,
new
I
pants and
that.
Socks.
But then you sort of moved on and you went through Kinder Eggs.
Yeah,
and
Kinder
Lego,
Eggs, the Lego.
Which I
the end,
find
there was
quite
a lot
charming.
Of Lego. There was a lot of Lego.
That's your
oh,
rider.
My word, the Kinder Egg years.
I want Lego. Yeah. And do you find that, because now at Feastival,
yeah.
you obviously have people like Mel C and the Lightning Seeds. Are they all kind of slightly looking at each other's riders? Is it?
No,
it
I think everybody does. Yeah, yeah. Whenever you go in someone's dressing room, you go, oh, yeah, good. Whirly's good idea.
Do they all get a bottle of Britpop?
Yeah, no, we look after everybody who comes here. I mean, there are problems with drinking lots of champagne. It's acidic, so you know if you're going to be getting stuck in, you have to chuck a carrot in occasionally to balance the acidity. Otherwise,
and it goes straight; it gets into the bloodstream quickly, so it lifts the mood. What was it? Churchill said, "A single glass of champagne imparts a feeling of exhilaration. the wits become more nimble. The imagination is agreeably stirred. But a bottle." Has the opposite effect.
Back in the 90s, like they as soon as you got on an aeroplane, they were like throwing yeah. it at you, and there was always a wonderful thing you'd sort of climb out of Heathrow on a dreary grey day with a glass of champagne, and then burst up through the clouds into the sunlight and just watch those bubbles fizzing and. Tearing over the horizon.
And did you get that thing where the air hostess used to come up and say, the captain would like to invite you up to the deck for the takeoff, and you just don't want to
no,
go
No, that was just you, Annika.
You're drinking. You just want to tuck into that champagne. Instead, you have to go up to the deck and go, oh, that's a mighty instrument panel you've got there.
They were obviously looking after you.
We're drinking too much champagne
probably to be letting anyone near the controls.
This has an apple-y character. What surprised me about this, and I don't want to sound patronising, was how good it was. So, and I think that there was a consensus among the critics, because when somebody well-known
I'm not the first person to do it, do you know what I mean? But I've certainly done some research. Yeah, we tested it alongside a non-vintage Tattinger and, you know, and various other, and it was just singing. It's got a lovely...
It's got a sort of toasty brioche at the beginning.
Toasty brioche.
On the top, and then that apple-y. And this is why English wine has evolved. It doesn't have that really brisk acidity that you used to get.
Right, yes,
years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, when you were at the height of your blowers, at the height of their sort of fame. This is much more mellow. And Annika, Alex says we should drink this with ice.
I do like, yeah. I mean, I was surprised how much of a rumpus that caused, actually. But there was a real Twitter stink.
You just haven't got time to go and get the ice. You just want to crack on with a bottle of champagne, don't you?
No, I do. I quite like beer with ice in it. On a really hot day, drinking light wines, really really cold. Like even get the glass in the freezer. You know, I think something nice.
I get asked a lot about this, how I feel about it, and I feel if you purchase the bottle, you can drink it any way you like. I mean, and if you're drinking for refreshment and gustatory pleasure, then yeah, sure. I mean, if you want to taste the nuances of it, you perhaps want to have really chilled down. But I don't actually have a problem with people putting ice in their rosé either.
Which is
unusual, because a lot of critics...
But I really enjoy the etiquette around drinking. You know, I love that scene in The Blues Brothers. Wrong glass, sir.
I've got a bit of a concept for you as well, a new marketing concept for you. How about Blur, the hangover cure? Genius?
Yeah, well, it would work, wouldn't it?
You sell hand in hand the Britpop champagne, the Blur hangover cure, and it's the perfect, you know, marrying of with a knob of cheese.
Well,
and the frazzles.
Do you want to try? Yeah. So I do think this goes particularly well together. Blue cheese is like cheese competent. Tuck in.
I can smell it from here.
Yeah. So Alex, Just talk us through what's in front of us.
We've got a big wheel of blue cheese here, which tastes absolutely best at this time, best time of year. Blue cheese is best eaten at about 12 weeks old. So what we're eating now, this is the last flush of summer grass, which is the gives you the best milk. And
it's intense. Actually, it's I mean, the scent is it? It's
lovely, Alex,
stinky
that
cheese.
Is,
this is.
Oh my
well,
goodness.
Blue cheese is you know you can smell thousands of different smells, but you can only taste six different things. And blue cheese is actually unique, and it's about the only thing that is all six things you can taste at the same time. It's got bitterness in the rind. It's got acidity. There's the sweetness from the milk sugars. There's salt in all cheese, and you get that from a good blue. You get that real umami, marmitey punch.
Yeah, you definitely.
And it's and a creamy blue like this one has got the other one that the Japanese have just
that
identified, Kakumi.
In life.
But what if you whack it on a frazzle?
Frazzle.
It just knocks it out of the park.
But I love the creamy texture of it, that creamy sweetness. You get that? And then the salt comes through.
I was reading some of the stuff you'd written, you were talking about your 1,000 songs for easy guitar books.
Oh, yeah.
That you used to really take note of with all the chord boxes. I think I had the first one at one time.
Did you really?
Which takes music down to its essence.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how it revealed the structure of your favourite childhood song.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Laurel and Hardy is on the Trail of the Lonesome Pine. And how it's the simplicity of it, really. And then I heard you talk about cheese. Saying it's a bit like music and that it's actually just basically four ingredients,
That is one of the things I love about cheese. It is all cheese is just four different
milk,
ingredients.
Rennet.
Salt and
bacteria.
Bacteria, yeah.
Yeah.
Call them cultures, bacteria.
So you start, composing music, starting with
four chords. Yeah, that'll do it. Usually, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It's just doing something simple really, really well. Is about the most difficult thing in the world, like Martina Navratilova at Wimbledon or the drummer in AC/DC, just doing something really, really well.
Can you take that four principle to winemaking? I'm just trying
well,
to
I think you. I think you probably can, I think you probably
you?
Can.
What would great, be the four? The
Anakin,
great...
there, but you're right. The great wines, they talk about the wine being made in the vineyard, i.e. they're very hands-off, and it's the gentle
really,
touch.
Yeah.
And it's the restraint in winemaking that you don't have to do everything. You just let the grapes shine through. And you're absolutely right. The simple thing's done well. I'm a bit distracted because I just had a frazzle with that.
I'm going to try it.
It's delicious.
Yeah. Well, I actually think it goes really well.
Yeah,
I was going to have a slurp
of this.
I love sparkling wine with food. It's not too...
Oh,
it's
my
not, it's
God,
not...
the frazzle.
I ran out of time this year. I wanted to make a really big frazzle. I thought, because at Feastival, like disposable plates are, it's an environmental catastrophe. I thought if we could make a really big
frazzle and serve
food on it. But I noticed that frazzles followed me on social, so I DM'd them saying, come on, let's make a really big frazzle. And they came back straight back saying no.
No, really. But you know what's so good about that frazzle? We shouldn't be giving them this sort of airtime because they dissed your idea of a giant frazzle, but it's because it dissolves so quickly. Because often when you're eating, cheese on a piece of bread or something, you're left with the bread to chew.
Right. Yeah,
and whereas this way, you're just the frazzle dissolves and you're just left with the cheese.
Well, there's a lovely texture bomb there as well. It's that you've got that's why cheese and crackers is so good. But I mean, actually, cheese and crisps. Do work really.
So
well, it's just like starchy. Yeah, like a Philadelphia and a Monster Munch is quite good as well.
Now, the other thing, I always think white wine goes very well with cheese, which is our second wine.
Yes, ooh. We're going on to a Chilean Chardonnay.
Oh, I love
before
chili.
Before Christmas, that was where you ended your tour.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Well, South America was the last four shows, and I've always loved going to South America. They really do. They love British rock bands. Now, it took us all by surprise. It's hard to believe, 12 months ago, I didn't even think it was going to happen. But last year was just sort of suddenly the band were getting back together. We made another record and out on the road again.
Alex, after all that gap, to suddenly put yourself out there?
So it was eight years since we even when we actually split up, it didn't take that long to get it together. And it literally couldn't have come at a better time because... I've got five teenage children who all thought I was a complete idiot. And so actually, it's worn off now. Just for a moment, I was like,
"Well, I met your eldest, and he loves you."
Yeah. So in a way, you've said this is what Dad does.
Yeah. Well, I just it was really, really mad because they were so, you know, the youngest was like, they looked like 5, 7, 9, and 11 last time. I remember looking over at Hyde Park during the last song, 80,000 people, hands aloft, all, you know, heads back, euphoric. I remember looking over at the side of the stage where I knew the kids were, and they were all kind of leaning on each other fast asleep, you know, it's because it was way past bedtime.
Yeah. It's a good level.
So to be able to sort of share it with them this time round.
It was, and that one, that was the really surprising thing about this time out with Blur, is how many kids there were. It's incredible how...
So another generation has discovered
your
music.
Yeah. It was, yeah, like really, really surprising. It was fantastic. The kids able to come to a lot of the shows you know, we did a lot of festivals as well. It was really good for them to see how other festivals operate and stuff because we get them all involved working at Festival here. But it was very well managed ending up in South America because it is another world. It's like a crazy parallel universe. And Mexico City, where we also went, is twice as, it's like two Londons plus Paris. And the amount of investment and building, and there's a completely different agenda there. Like all the doom and misery of winter. You know, it was summertime, high summer, and Christmas. The Argentina as well, they just
upbeat.
They really connect with British guitar music. Takes me 2 years to recover.
Yeah, no, yeah. I'm not surprised. And can I just ask the riders this time round? I think the nation
still
needs
the same
to know.
Pants, socks, cheese. Yeah, cheese, please. It was very satisfying.
So you've given up on the Lego.
Yeah, no more. Yeah, I just, you're buying yourself a problem with Lego. I had to. There was one Christmas when all the kids wanted was Lego, and I spent like a week building Lego. You know, Dad, want to build it now? But actually, they did like Blur. But I remember Festival. We had Lego as a sponsor at Festival 1 year, and there was a just behind that wall there was a crane lowering a shipping container, but made to look like a Lego brick with the Lego branding on the side. It was being lowered into that field, and the kids were all like. Yes. Yeah, they like that even more than Blur, actually. But Blur was good.
Have we tried this?
Well, yeah. So what we have in our glass is a 2022, actually, Chardonnay from the Santa Ynez. It's made by DiMartino, and we're in the Limeri Valley in Chile.
Now, okay, so where's that in?
Well, if you think about
it. Because it's got some latitude.
Chile sort of hugs the Andes. It's that long, thin. And we're up in the north. We're about 200 miles north of Santiago. But if you think of England is a hard place to make wine and grow grapes. The marginal climate. Yeah. We are going, you know, 8,000 miles to a viticultural paradise. It's so easy to make wine in Chile. Well, not easy, but it's, you know, it's clear blue skies, hardly any pollution. The yields are larger. And I went there first, I think, in 2004. And Chile used to have a reputation of making, you know, very good sort of reliable wine. We used to turn up at a winery and they wanted to show us everything. You know, so we taste 50 wines at the winery. I remember the last day we were exhausted and we turned up at this winery and they said, we've got some great news. We put on a little tasting of all the other regions that you couldn't go to. So we didn't actually go to the Limeria Valley and we tasted round and suddenly we got to these three wines that were made in the Limeria Valley. And it just opened my eyes. They were the best three wines we had on that whole trip. And the great thing about the Limeria, it's cool. So it's a star for Chardonnay, which we have in our glass. It makes wines of real interest and purity and elegance that can sit alongside, you know, the great wines of Europe.
I'm just so happy with the cheese as well. I can't. This is what has been missing from our wine podcast. I'm going to make it my rider now that we have Alex James cheese at every recording because this is what we need. I mean, I'm not even joking.
Well, I love this. It's really good, isn't it? It's got... really complex. And
so in the Limeri, it's known for Chardonnay. So the DiMartinos, this is the fourth generation. It's now run by Marco and Sebastian. And they're serious winemakers. But this doesn't look out of place in the Macon, does it? Or, yeah.
Tell us about your festival, because it takes place here. Because my friend Francie Clarkson, who drove me here today, because we were at primary school together, she's your
neighbour.
That's
crazy.
She bought you kippers.
She's Manx. Yeah,
so
the best kippers in the world.
I know about you, Alex, just through the delivery and the parties she's had here and everything. But she was telling me about the festival, and it just sounds insane because it's on the grounds here. You open, you're opening your house to people with tents.
Yeah, well, so I think we'd been here about 10 years and the cheese business was kind of established, and Jamie Oliver called me and we'd met playing in a comic relief band together because he's quite a good drummer. So he really loves music. He's like, hey, you love food as much as I love music. You know, you've got the venue. Why don't we try and do a food and music festival? Actually, at that time, nobody was doing that. When Blur first started doing festivals in the early 90s, there was literally two in the whole world, Reading and Glastonbury. And I remember telling my mum we were doing Glastonbury, and she was aghast. She thought I was going to get murdered or something. You know, it was like a properly countercut. You know, the news presenters on South Today would be,
it's, oh my God, hippies, it's the Glastonbury hippies weekend.
Attempting to attend the Glastonbury Music Festival have been apprehended by police. I mean, we know it was a little bit edgy.
What was the first year you did it?
For 91, I think.
But I mean, festivals have changed so much. It was all the
promoters could do to get the sound system to work in those days. And, you know, the toilets were quagmire, the food was awful, but somehow or other, people, they just loved them. And flocks of them in their droves, and they proliferated and went global. And like with anything, as it became more popular and the science of staging them became much better understood, and now you can add all these incredible layers of sophistication doing Michelin. I mean, the farm normally ends up with about the same number of Michelin stars as London for the weekend.
It is extraordinary, isn't it? In a way, music on some festivals is almost an add-on. It's more about sort of lifestyle retreat and food markets and things. But I think you've managed to keep the music element strong.
I think, you know, it's a big undertaking. And so, but it's really just filling. When we bought the farm, it was completely derelict. And Feastival is just filling it up with everything. Food, music and family really is what Feastival's all about. And, you know, got five kids, six cheeses, 9 albums. So, you know, it's all the stuff I'm thinking about anyway. And I just loved, you know, it's so much easier than going on tour, just bringing everything
here.
And
so do you play?
Usually, every year I do usually jump up with one of the bands.
Will, tell us about our Beaujolais.
Number three. Well.
Oh, the Beaujolais. Yeah. So is it a Beaujolais?
It's a Beaujolais. Excellent. Because I thought, what the other great wine that goes with cheese.
Fantastic. Yeah, I've dined to heaven.
Beaujolais Cru, and again, if you're talking about regions that are exciting, Beaujolais is so exciting. The grape variety is Gamay, and in France they have a word for it, Gouillon, which just means digestible. But it's just a perfect wine for this time of year, particularly.
Cheers,
I think it goes really
cheers.
Good.
Cheers. Oh, this is delightful.
This is pleasant. I mean, this is
you're looking very happy now.
Hard at work. With a frazzle, with a knob of Alex's cheese on top, which is always going to sound wrong.
This is the 2021 Vigneron de Bel Air, and it's Brewery. So in the largest Beaujolais Cru at the South. And these are the sort of most concentrated.
That's a lovely breakfast wine, that one. It's nice and light. Mm.
Just as we're doing our sort of, you know, cutting down for January. A damp January as opposed to a dry January.
I think that's the way to go. Moderation.
Oh, definitely.
Not abstinence. Yeah.
And trade up.
It's the holy trilogy, isn't it? You've got wine, food and music.
Well, I guess, as
far as I can see. That's it.
Well, you could expand the wine portfolio.
I love doing it. And I'd love to do a rosé Britpop, I think.
And we're now living through this age where we drink rosé all year round.
Mm.
Well, we look forward to the rosé, the Britpop rosé, and the Blur hangover queer, which obviously I'm interested in seeing developed. Alex, thank you so much for today. Favourite wine? You can't mention the Britpop.
No, I can't.
But
I was absolutely knocked out by this Chilean.
You love the Chardonnay, didn't you?
Yeah, really nice.
Thank you, Alex.
What a delight.
Cheers.
Thank you for having us.
Nice.
Three glasses. Cheers. Well, that's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. The series producer is Anya Pierce, the producer Callum McRae, and the assistant producer has been Shana Johnson.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your favourite podcast app.
We'll be back next week with more delicious wines and another great guest.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted today are noted in the episode description. And you can get your hands on all of them from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
Thank you very much for listening. We hope to see you next week for more Wine Times.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Jane Garvey.
And I'm Fee Glover.
Off Air with Jane and Fee is going live.
We are taking to the stage at the amazing Crucible Theatre in Sheffield on Friday, the 31st of May.
It'll be a night full of surprises. We'll have a special guest, we'll involve you in the audience, and we'll embarrass ourselves. You really won't want to miss it.
Well, the surprise is we don't yet know what's in it, so it genuinely is a night of surprises.
Well, you've surprised me already. It's not just us. Our live show is part of an exciting new podcast festival called Crosswires, which is taking place in some really amazing venues across Sheffield from the 31st of May to the 2nd of June.
So other podcasters that you'll be able to see include Katie Price, Catherine Ryan, Ramesh Ranganathan and the original Adam Buxton. But there's also a whole host of free fringe events, family shows, surprise acts and after parties that Jane and I haven't yet been invited to.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time. Head to crosswires.live for tickets and more information.